The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary. Yes, indeed. Your turn to Ask the Pastor. Phones open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And perhaps this next segment will be a unique opportunity for you to find out about the home of the Reformation. Pastor Hank Simon is with us from Galilee Lutheran Church in Pasadena, Maryland. Good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
And you and Dr. Mary Mann Simon recently returned from a trip to Germany.
That's correct.
Tell us about that, how it came about, and where you went.
Well, there's an organization called Wittenberg English Ministry, through which pastors volunteer to do what I call the mission trip over in the city in East Germany, where Martin Luther served for the second half of his life and did most of his important work. Lutherstadt Wittenberg, which is about an hour's train ride pretty directly south of Berlin. And what happens is that pastors from the United States, but also there have been pastors from Canada and from Australia, go over there and provide a ministry to generally English-speaking tourists, but also some of the Wittenbergers who want to practice their English or want to worship in English. And so on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday nights in a week, there are devotions from 4:30 to 5 o'clock in a 14th century chapel next to the town church, and then one of the Saturdays that you're there, there's an hour-long service that you conduct. One is in the castle church, which is where Luther nailed his 95 theses on the door. There was the town bulletin board of the day. And the other Saturday, you do service at this town church, which is where Luther preached close to 2,000 sermons. Each week you do the devotions Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then the hour-long service on Saturday. And it's quite a humbling experience to preach just a few feet, basically, from Luther's grave in the castle church, and to be very close to where his pulpit was in the town church.
I have the impression that this trip helped history come alive for you.
Very much so. History was one of my majors in college, and by being there, by actually being in Wittenberg for close to 2 weeks, you really get a sense of what it was like. Now, some things have changed. When you go to the castle church, the door that was used by Martin Luther was wood, and in 1760, I think it was, there was a war taking place in that part of Germany, and the door was burned down, and a lot of the castle church was destroyed. And then it was rebuilt by the German Kaiser, the emperor, back in the late 1800s. And so the church that you're in doesn't look at all like the church that Luther preached in. It's very beautiful, but it has a lot of stained glass windows and mementos of the Reformation, as well as the graves of Luther and his co-worker Philip Melanchthon, mm-hmm. plus the graves of the two prince electors of the Holy Roman Emperor, the dukes of that part of Saxony. The names are escaping me. I know there was John the Steadfast, who was the younger brother, and then I can't remember for the life of me right now. This is a senior moment, Paul. I can't remember the life of the first duke who took, or Frederick the Wise, took care of Luther and protected him. Although apparently he never met Luther in person, and I'm guessing that was so that he could honestly say that he didn't, you know, work with Luther or know Luther. Because that gave him some political cover in that day. But it was an awesome kind of experience. When you talked about history coming alive, we stayed in a place called the Luther Hotel, which is run by a Lutheran Mission Society out of Berlin. And they run this, and they emphasize Luther, but they also use the prophets to help support their city mission work in Berlin and other places. And that hotel is just basically around the corner, a couple blocks, and then down the street from where Luther lived. And so at night when Mary and I go to bed, we say Luther's evening prayer from the small catechism. And one night I said to her, you know, this prayer that we are saying tonight was written just down the corner, basically, and around the street almost 500 years ago, and we're this close to it.
Do the locals embrace that history? Is that a big deal for them, as important for them as it is for you?
It depends. Most of them know, because only 18% of Wittenberg is even Christian.
But what about the historical significance outside of Christianity for Martin Luther?
I think it's mixed, because of the fact that, you know, you had the Nazis in Germany from the 30s onward, and then after World War II, the communists came in and really did a number on Christianity. The church survived, but you have a very small percentage of Germans who even claim church membership because of that history. They're fixing up the old part of Wittenberg, the old town section, in preparation for 2017, which is the 500th anniversary of the posting of those 95 theses or debating points.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of money is going into fixing up things. And people that we talk to who live in other parts of Wittenberg, the more modern parts, some of them are upset because the government money is going to fixing up the tourist areas and not, you know, doing the improvements they would like to see in the modern part of the town.
Is there at least some zoning that prevents a KFC from being across the street from where the 95 theses were posted?
They're pretty careful about what you do, yeah, and especially in the area where the historical events took place. That's very, very rigidly controlled. So, yes, that part of the city, which is the closest part to the Elbe River, they watch that. And one of the factors is that not only is there history there, but it's history that goes earlier than the Reformation. The town church that I mentioned, the Stadtkirche, that's where, like I said, Luther preached almost 2,000 sermons. It's where his children were baptized. One of them, Elizabeth, is actually buried in the church because she died at the age of 5 months. It's where Luther and Katie's wedding was blessed, their marriage was blessed. And so it's the oldest building in Wittenberg, and it goes back to the 1300s.
Are there museums that would perhaps house early printing presses and maybe even the original 95 theses with a nail hole in them?
I'm afraid the original 95 theses are long gone. And it's interesting because the original 95 theses were written in Latin because Luther was a university professor at the University of Wittenberg. What happened was that some enterprising printer took them and translated them into German and then distributed them, and they became hotcakes and people were buying them. What sold, though, even more than the 95 theses, at least according to the Luther House Museum, was a sermon that Luther wrote on indulgences and forgiveness. And that went through a bunch of editions in just 2 or 3 years after he had posted the 95 theses. So it was really his raising the whole issue of whether forgiveness can be bought, as was the case with those indulgences, or not.
You were preaching in largely a secular setting.
Well, we were I got to preach in the Catholic Church and the town church, so there were the attendance, because it was in English for one thing, but the attendance was fairly small, yeah.
Hmm. What's that like? Is that disappointing?
No.
You expected that?
I felt very, very humbled, and privileged to be able to do this. There's at least 25,000 Lutheran pastors in the United States. Less than 200 have gotten to preach in Luther's churches. And we are asked to do a regular service out of one of the American Lutheran hymnals, and so that's what we did. They both have great pipe organs, and so the pipe organ sort of overwhelmed the number of worshipers that we had. But it was just, he was relying, I think, in a special way on what the Lord says through Isaiah when he says, "My word will not return empty, but it will accomplish my purposes for it, and it will prosper for the reason that I sent it out." And so you preach the word, and you never know who's going to hear it. One of the things that I didn't expect was that we had a lot of people who speak English as a second language, not a lot, but as far as percentages of the people who were in worship or at the devotions, from a number of countries. We had people from Tanzania, from Scotland, from England, from Austria, from the Czech Republic, from Switzerland, from Denmark, Finland, and Sweden, in addition to the United States and Germany in our services. And that really brought home to me the worldwide nature of the Christian faith and of the spread of Lutheranism.
They were there because of Martin Luther.
Yes. Yeah, they were there as tourists to see the sights. And I must admit, the first time that I went into the Castle Church, it wasn't quite chills up and down my spine, but it was just sort of a feeling of awe that I really was finally in this place where Luther, had preached and was in many ways the start of the Lutheran Reformation.
505-7850-1-800-730-2727. If you have questions about Lutherland or anything else that's on your mind, give us a call here at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And did Mary share some impressions with you, perhaps something you hadn't thought of that she observed?
Mary is doing some writing for a couple of periodicals, and she was just very, much immersed in that. She did a number of interviews with different Lutheran officials, and she, of course, she picks up stuff that I don't.
That's what's good about a couple like you. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that she was just, she was very much a part of the team being there, and so I can't think of anything at this point that she said, in that way, but I'm sure she did. I just can't remember it.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Brenda, you're on KFUO Radio with Pastor Hank Simon.
Good morning. Oh, yes, I'm back again. What could be the one shining example for Martin Luther's split from the Catholic Church? You might give 2 points, but we'll try to do it in one. I'm listening, and I will hang up and listen for that.
Do you understand the question, Pastor?
Oh, rephrase it. What would be the prime motive for Martin Luther's split from the Catholic Church?
Okay, well, I think the reason that Luther got excommunicated from the church, and he didn't split, he was kicked out, was that he emphasized that God's love and acceptance of sinners is a totally free gift. It is God's grace. It's not something we can earn by working hard enough or going to church long enough or praying so much. It's not something that we can buy. In his case, where indulgences, which were statements of forgiveness, were being sold. It's that God's love in accepting us and making us his children is totally a matter of grace. God's unconditional acceptance of us with no conditions, no strings attached.
Well, are we saying that one of the reasons that he was excommunicated was that he didn't believe in indulgences per se?
That's correct. That was what started it. There were other things that came up, but because what had happened was that some of the authorities of the day had taken these statements guaranteeing forgiveness, and people were buying them. Luther said that's selling forgiveness, and God's forgiveness is not for sale. It's there as a free gift because of Jesus.
You know, in a way, that reminds me of Martin Luther's actions. Reminds me of Jesus overturning the tables where they were selling in the temple.
Oh.
Huh. Well, the church has to be careful when it gets into selling things.
That's right. All right. Thank you for your help.
Okay,
thank you, Brenda. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Would you go back there and do it again?
Oh, yes, except the waiting list is about 4 or 5 years long.
That's a popular effort, yes, indeed.
Well, and considering that it's totally a volunteer kinds of things, I mean, this is, I got a week's leave from the congregation to do work for the church at large, but the rest of the time that we spent was vacation time, mm-hmm. and you take care of all your own expenses when you're over there. I mentioned the Luther Hotel. They do give us a reduced rate because of the ministry that's going on to the English-speaking tourists and population, but everything else you're responsible for. So it is like a mission trip for, you know, lay members of a congregation, except this is for pastors.
Now, were you able to not only tune into what was happening back here in the States, but connect with what the issues were in Germany at this time?
That was tough because, you know, I don't speak German and neither does Mary. The thing we were most concerned about was our oldest daughter, Christy, who was on bed rest at that time, expecting her third child, and Luke Alexander came along a week ago today.
Oh, congratulations.
Born at St. Luke's. And so that's what we were concerned about. English language newspapers in Wittenberg, which is not a booming metropolis, were not readily available, and there was no English language TV. We ended up in Leipzig for 4 days after we were in Wittenberg, and there we got USA Today, the international edition, and they had on some English language cable stations, I think from France and from Germany. So we caught up somewhat then. We did occasionally check online, and that's when I found out right before we left that the Cardinals had come from 10.5 games back,
yeah.
to actually make it into the playoffs. But we were focusing a lot on what was going on there, plus also on Christy and what was happening as far as things back here in the States.
Did you have a chance to talk with the local Lutheran pastor anywhere along the line?
We did talk with them some, yes. But they're pretty busy with their ministries that are going on. We did get the chance because there were 3 days where we weren't scheduled, which was Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. We got the chance to do some day trips. We bought a rail pass before we left here. And so we went to Eisleben, where Luther was born, and saw the museum there, and saw the church where he preached his last sermons, because he actually died there also. He had gone back to his hometown to do a mediation between a couple of feuding counts, and he got sick and died. And the house where he died is not available to be seen because they're fixing it up for 2017. And the church where he was baptized is not available to be seen because of that reason, too. There's a number of things going on like that. This is actually the Luther decade in Germany. And so we're right in the middle of that, and they're using this as a way to fix up stuff. In Wittenberg, for instance, you can't go to Philip Melanchthon's house, which was right next door, basically, to Luther's, because they're fixing it up again for 2017. They're expecting a lot of people to come on the 500th anniversary. We also went to Erfurt, where Luther became a monk, and we were in the cathedral where he was ordained, just a huge church. And then we went to Eisenach, where Luther was as a student. It's also the place where Johann Sebastian Bach was born, and there's a big museum about that. We were in Leipzig, where Luther was in the Leipzig disputation with John Eck in 1519, and saw the churches there where Bach was involved. And then we went to Halle, where Handel was born, and learned to play the organ, and saw where he was baptized. And we went to uh-huh. Weimar, and we also went to Dresden, which is a big Lutheran community farther east.
I just wonder if you observed that their culture tries to imitate American culture. Did you get that impression? Are they plagued by the same cultural problems that we are here in America?
It's hard to say. You know, I hesitate to make any kind of statement, Paul, having just been there a couple of weeks. What we didn't find out was that there are some people who yearn for for the steadiness of being under the communists, and because they were in East Germany, and they, for some of the older people, they feel that they haven't gotten the help from the West Germans that they thought they were promised, even though it's been over 20 years since they had the reunification of the two halves of Germany. We saw that they're very very firm about not being open on Sundays. But people aren't in church. So it's hard to know. In the places we were at, I don't know that there's so much antagonism toward the church as more just they're apathetic. The sort of what I think we're starting to experience here in the States.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. John, your question for Pastor Hank Simon.
Good morning, both of you. It's good to hear you both on the radio today. I'll make a quick question here, and then I'll get off of here so you guys can answer it, mull it around. My question was, basically, what did you think was, I don't know if it would be a disagreement or disillusionment or maybe just disagreement that Martin Luther had with the book of James?
Luther was concerned. He called James the straw epistle at one point.
Yeah,
and
mm-hmm.
I think with Luther, it depends. There are a couple of things. Luther was a scripture scholar, and Luther's views changed over the course of the years. And so you can find young Luther and old Luther, and he'll write things that seem to be somewhat opposed to each other. Mm-hmm. Luther's concern was that the time that he lived, people very much thought that if they only worked hard enough or prayed hard enough, that God would accept them on the basis of what they did, that they could in some way earn the salvation. Mm-hmm. And he said at one point that he even hated God because God was a just God, and that was unfair because Luther could never measure up to God's standards. That's why Luther, and he came out of the tradition of St. Augustine, who very much emphasized that we are saved by grace and focused on the free gift of God's forgiveness. And Lutherans have continued to do that.
Right.
What he saw James being used as a way for people to say, well, faith isn't enough, you also need works.
Right.
And so Luther thought that James could be misused. But Luther also said things like this: we are saved by faith alone, but faith is never alone. It is always active in love. And so for him, it very much was that there is that you have the fact that we are saved, and then when we realize that, out of gratitude to God in response to his goodness, we seek to serve our Lord and our neighbor, and that's the good works that come out of it. It's interesting. I'm preaching this Reformation Sunday week on Ephesians 2, and verses 8 and 9 say, by grace you are saved through faith, and that not by yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, so that no one can boast. And then verse 10 says, for we are God's workmanship, his creation, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which he has prepared beforehand. And so grace is the way in which we know that we have God's new life and which we are saved, but grace also then touches us so that we, as Jesus says in the second great commandment, love our neighbor as ourselves.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I understand.
Well, I'm glad you do.
I was assuming that it could have been, well, I was watching the clock here. I was assuming it was possibly something because as I was reading it, I was kind of gathering it that it was a disagreement with a works over faith situation, and so I was just evidently I was interpreting it correctly.
Yes, I don't think it. I think when it comes to faith and works, it's not an either or; it's a both and. But faith always comes first.
Right.
Otherwise, the works are empty.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, well,
thank you, John.
Thank you much. Have a good one.
Thanks.
It'll be a different Reformation Sunday for you this year, I get the impression.
Yeah, Mary is away. She's on her way to Iowa, and she has cautioned me not to put too much Wittenberg into the sermon.
However, Scotty has a question about Wittenberg and
okay.
Herman about Germany. Scotty and Herman, hang on during the break. We're going to be right back with Pastor Hank Simon on the Bible study. Ask the Pastor, with phones open at 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
Servanthood is a core value of Concordia Seminary. To be a servant is alien to so many people in our society. Even some clergy take on authoritarian airs. But Jesus, Son of God and Lord of all, came as a servant. We want Concordia graduates to model servanthood to their congregations and to their communities. Servanthood, that's the Christian way.
The Studio A program is heard Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 right here on KFUO Radio. It's a program that uses the lens of a Lutheran Christian worldview to examine and discern things like theology and politics, history, family, education, culture, media. Whenever Christ crosses culture, Studio A is a program that serves listeners by equipping them to be salt and light, because it's difficult to be flavorful or illuminating if we're uninformed or one-dimensional in our faith. That's weekdays 4 to 6 on KFUO Radio.
There are many ways for you to keep up to date on the ministry of KFUO Radio. One of the easiest is to follow us on Facebook. Just go to Facebook.com/KFUO Radio, then click the like button. Every time we add something new to our Facebook page, you'll receive the updates on your news feed page. What will you find on KFUO's Facebook page? Well, you'll find program audio. Also, you'll receive the occasional behind-the-scenes video and information about the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Become our Facebook friend today and follow the ministry of KFUO Radio.
You can provide for the people you love and the ministries you care about, including KFUO Radio, through a charitable estate plan. By establishing a charitable annuity, trust, or other planned giving instrument, you and your spouse may enjoy cash payments for life and at the same time leave a legacy gift for KFUO Radio. All you have to do is contact our gift planning specialist.
Call Joan Harwell at 800-844-0524. That's 800-844-0524.
Conscience Writes. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. Members of Congress have been told that government policies increasingly are forcing religious groups and individuals to violate their moral convictions. At a House hearing, Bishop William Lorry said Catholic hospitals and charities are losing government contracts for refusing to accept abortion, contraception, and gay adoption. Republican Congressman Trent Frank said,
"These regulations are forcing religious groups to choose between abandoning their social work or abandoning their sincerely held religious beliefs in order to continue to serve the needy."
Democrats at the hearing questioned the need for conscience exemptions. The Nebraska chapter of the National Association of Social Workers is demanding that the state adopt rules requiring mental health professionals to offer referrals to gay patients if they refuse to treat them because of religious beliefs. But the head of the Nebraska Catholic Conference said conscience protections should remain in place. I'm Steve Coleman.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
According to Planned Parenthood's own words, their main reason for being in existence is to lower the rate of unintended pregnancies. And they're using hundreds of millions of your tax dollars trying to do it. They've been exposed as a failure by one of their close allies, the Guttmacher Institute. It's basically the research arm of Planned Parenthood. Guttmacher's report on statistics during a recent five-year period shows the rate of unintended pregnancies didn't go down at all. It gets worse. The rate of unintended pregnancies for poor women went up a shocking 50%. And yet pro-abortion activists and politicians insist we throw good money after bad. The statistics show Planned Parenthood isn't reducing pregnancies. Their focus is aborting pregnancies. This means killing innocent unborn babies.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Let's ask the pastor on the Bible study. Pastor Hank Simon is our guest today. And let's go right to the phones, Pastor. Scotty's been patiently holding. Scotty, your question about Wittenberg.
Okay, I was born, born in Wittenberg and speak German, but this is a surprise. It's in Wittenberg, Missouri here, in southeast Missouri, and a lot of people speak German here, including me at 86 years old. You know where that is, where they landed? The first three boats landed, and one of them was sunk on the way over, the sailboat that came to America.
Pastor Simon, you're familiar with that?
Yeah, the Saxon immigration?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Wittenberg is in Perry County, I'm assuming?
Yeah. It's kind of
white. Perry County, but it was a long time ago.
Right, but I'm here yet. I almost didn't know how to speak English when we still had Tub and talk German. That's why I say I'm going to surprise you.
Yes, I was born, sir.
In Wittenberg and speak German. But anyway, I thought I'd give that, and that must have been a long time ago, and like you say, but it's still a good remembrance, and people talked about it.
Well, and I think the Lutherans down in Perry County even have named their high school after Saxony.
Saxony High School.
Yeah, and that's the area where Wittenberg is in.
Wittenberg, Aldenburg, Frohna.
Yeah.
Those towns.
Those names were all on the map that we looked at, in the area around Wittenberg.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I thought it would be interesting to call you and tell you about it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Herman, you're on KFUO with Pastor Hank Simon.
Yes. Just a couple of things. Just on behalf of myself and I presume on the listenership to say to you, Mr. Clayton, our prayerful blessing to you and congratulations and best wishes on the marriage of your daughter. And
oh, thank you.
Blessings to your family. And yes, Pastor Simon, just listening to the caller there, that one ship that was lost was the smaller sailing ship, the Amelia, that didn't make it to the U.S.
Right.
With your trip to Germany, I have two questions. One's a detail question. Could you ride the German train system to Eisleben and Wittenberg, and also the German state church, the state-sponsored church, has pretty much its emphasis pretty much gone into what's called social activist-type policy sermons without any really any theological or confessional content?
Well, as far as the first one goes, we flew into De Gaulle Airport in Paris, and then we took a regional plane to the airport between Leipzig and Halle. And from then on, all of our transportation either was, Herman, by rail or by foot. So, yes, we had to change trains three times to get to Eisenach, from Wittenberg, and we had to change trains three times to get to Eisleben, and in both cases then there was a bit of a walk. I forgot to mention that one of the highlights of the trip in Eisenach was going up to the Wartburg Castle, and we saw the room where Luther translated the New Testament into German in 1521 and 1522, and that was a special place to be. As far as what the German churches were doing, they don't have a state church in the sense, for instance, that the Church of England is the state church in the United Kingdom. My understanding is that what they have are churches that are supported by taxes, and they prefer the term territorial churches. For instance, and this could be wrong, I didn't do any research on this, but if I remember right, if you're a German citizen, say if you live in Wittenberg, your part of your taxes can go to support there's a Catholic church there which has been there for a little over 100 years, or one of the Lutheran parishes, or you can opt out and not have to pay the tax. And I think that's where they probably get the figure that only 18% of Wittenbergers consider themselves Christian. There are churches of mixed confession in Germany as a result of the Prussian Union back in 1817, that where the Kaiser wanted the Protestants all to get together. And then there are churches like in Leipzig that consider themselves very solidly Lutheran and call themselves the Lutheran Landeskirche, which would mean the Church of the Territory. I don't understand German, Herman, so I can't tell you as far as what they were preaching or what they were, or what they all are doing. I do know that there are some small independent Lutheran groups, including one that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is connected with. That's the Schöpf, I guess, if I say this right, the Selbstständige Evangelische Lutherische Kirche. And we did see, they don't have a church in Wittenberg, but we did when we were in, just trying to think, which I think it might have been Weimar, we saw, it was in Halle. In Halle, we saw the chapel that they use in a castle for their services. So I don't know if that answers your question or not. I just don't have the background to be able to give you enough details.
Well, thank you anyway. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Pastor Simon, I'm pressing you on lots of questions, and you only had 2 weeks there. I realize that. But are there any so-called non-denominational megachurches in Germany?
Well, in Wittenberg, that's a city of about 40,000, so not that we saw. We saw we went by a Catholic church, as I said. That's been there since 1899. There were the two Lutheran churches. One was the town church, which has about 4,800 members registered. And then there is the Catholic church has about 120. And then there were several small Baptist churches. That's what we saw. So, I can't speak for what the rest of the area was like, Paul, because we were just touring, and so where we were was basically in the historical section of Wittenberg most of the time, which was great for getting a feel for it and having it sort of etched in our heads. But as far as a sense of what else is going on, I don't have it.
Now, are there any of Martin Luther's Catholic churches with signs on them that Martin Luther was here? I mean, his Catholic roots. What about that? And then what about Katie's Convent?
Okay, we didn't go to Katie's Convent, and we didn't. And there's a play. It's called Torgau. That's another small village or small city, and that's where she died, and it was near her convent. We didn't go to Torgau. What's interesting is that. When the Reformation took over churches at different points in the 1500s, they took over churches which had been Roman Catholic, and
some churches were burned, weren't they?
No, but you had another professor from the University of Wittenberg, Andreas Karlstadt, who when Luther was in the Wartburg and was under protective custody more or less, hiding. Because he was wanted dead or alive after the Diet at Worms. Karlstadt was very much went after anything that smacked that he said of Roman Catholic ritual. And so statues were overturned, stained glass windows
were destroyed,
and all of that sort of thing. What Luther was much more conservative as a reformer. He said, if it isn't forbidden in the Bible, then we can keep it because... Just because it's been misused doesn't mean you throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. For instance, when you're in the Castle Church, because it was redone, it doesn't have a lot of graves in it. It's got, and the custom in some places in Europe is for people of prominence to be buried in the church itself. I'm trying to remember, Paul. Have you been in England?
No, not in France and Italy.
Okay, I don't know if you saw it in France and Italy, but in England, Westminster Abbey is almost like an indoor cemetery in some spots because it has all these huge sculptures of people who are buried there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little of that in the town church, like I say, Luther's 5-month-old daughter Elizabeth is buried there, but in the Roman or in the Castle Church, you've got the remains of the last Roman Catholic Propst, or I guess you could call him something like a bishop, of Wittenberg, and he's buried there, and you've got his grave which has carvings, including the popes and the carvings.
Yeah.
They didn't take that away. If you go to other churches that are Lutheran, you will see that if they had something special, for instance, in a stained glass window or in an altarpiece before that predated the Reformation, that honored Mary, they've kept it. And in fact, the name of the town church where Luther preached all those times is St. Mary's Church.
It's fair to say that the Reformation impacted all aspects of church life, from the architecture of the churches to the interiors of the churches to the music to the art, everything.
Yes. And one thing that was, and one thing that we did at every service of the six services that I, no, eight services, three, six devotions and the two Saturday services that I led, was that we sang A Mighty Fortress in English, of course. When you talked about the how it affected the architecture, one of the things that was added by Lutherans, I'm assuming, was that the pulpit became much more prominent, and so you have these really high pulpits that are very prominent in many of the Protestant churches. And because there was no PA system, people really, you know, you have to get way up to preach in them. And they're often not at the front, but if the church has, say, 40 or 50 rows of pews, they're more like in the center, so that people would turn around and listen more, maybe listen with their back to the preacher, or turn around. And in Luther's day, most of the churches didn't have pews, so people, if they weren't going to stand for the whole time, brought a stool in or something to sit down.
Those high pulpits, I was talking with Missouri District President Ray Murley Sunday night about the tall pulpit that they have at Historic Trinity Lutheran Church in Soulard. And he says, yes, they have one similar to that in Far, Missouri, down there around that Perry County area we were just talking about with Scotty. In Far, Missouri, that church, that Lutheran church there, has a very tall pulpit, just like the one at Historic Trinity Soulard, just like the ones you describe in Germany.
Right, and I've seen that when we were in Switzerland last year. The Protestant churches there, which were not Lutheran but were Reformed, they have the same emphasis. Because preaching was lifted up. There were sermons of sorts before the Reformation, but one of the things that the Reformation did was emphasize the teaching through sermons.
Prominent in many Roman Catholic churches will be frescoes of the Stations of the Cross. During this time of transition, during the Reformation, was that thrown out, or were there Stations of the Cross in the church where you preached?
Not where I preached. I do know there are some Lutheran churches that have taken the Stations of the Cross, and you'd have to help me here, Paul. I think the Roman Catholic version, there are 14. There is a Lutheran version of that, which is entirely biblical, which has 10. Because in the Roman Catholic Stations of the Cross, there's the legend of Veronica wiping the face of Jesus and her veil and all of that.
Oh yes, I remember that.
And that's not in scriptures. That's a story. And so Lutherans typically, if they had Stations of the Cross, wouldn't use that. But there is a Lutheran version which with 10 of the events that happened during Holy Week as a devotional way to go with Jesus in spirits walking along as he goes to the cross.
So as you perhaps had an opportunity to converse with some of these tourists from other countries that were there at your service, what kinds of questions did they ask you about religious life in America?
They really didn't. They were more interested in talking about, for instance, the little chapel that we used. It originally was built in 1368 and then burned and then built again. It's called the Corpus Christi Capella, and it was surrounded by, at when it was built, by the graveyard. So Luther actually preached in there and conducted funerals, and then the body would be buried in the graveyard. He also used this area, this chapel, as a place where in 1518 he gathered a group of his friends, and they drafted a letter to the Pope in Rome saying, you know, I've been accused of heresy since what I said in 1517. I would like a church council to meet to talk about this. So this was actually a little chapel. It seats maybe, 35, 40 people if you crowd them in. They wanted to know about that. Or they were interested in knowing certain things about the churches in which we were worshiping. But we didn't have a lot of questions about American Christianity or Lutheranism.
Now, for a period of time, Martin Luther was in hiding.
Yes. For 10 months in that castle I mentioned outside of Eisenach in Thuringia, the the Wartburg Castle.
The ring? Is that where the word Thuringer comes from, the lunch meat?
Yes, and I'll tell you, when you buy a Thuringer Bratwurst from a vendor, we I had to conduct a survey, so we tried it in three different towns, and those are just delicious.
You know, I've been around that business all my life, and I didn't realize those were actual places. And there's another smoked summer sausage called Servalot. And there's actually a town called Servalot. Apparently, these towns competed with their sausages.
That could well be. One of the things that the Luther Hotel in Lutherstadt Wittenberg did, which was very nice, was they had a big breakfast in the mornings. And there were all kinds of different sausages and cold cuts as well as eggs. And they had something which I've never had, which was a sausage salad, which was sort of like... when we do ham salad, my mom used to use bologna instead of ham. But, you know, you put ham salad together. They had a sausage salad with pieces of sausage together with some kind of sauce, and that was really good.
Well, those folks eat liverwurst for breakfast on toast, you know, Braunschweiger.
Yeah, they had liverwurst liverwurst there, too, yeah.
Hmm. Any other impressions or observations you'd like to share with us from your trip to Germany?
Well, if people are able to go, I think it's... a real opportunity to see that Martin Luther wasn't just somebody that you read about in history books, that he was a flesh and blood person. I mean, he was not perfect. He said some things, especially towards the end of his life, that Lutherans don't agree with. He was a person of his time. He was, you know, wanted dead or alive. He was, in fact, an outlaw, basically, as far as the Holy Roman Empire was concerned for the last quarter century of his life, which was one of the reasons he didn't get married any earlier than he did. And so he could be intemperate, he could get angry, but his emphasis on God's grace in our lives, you know, the way to sum up a Lutheran approach to Christianity, Paul, is that we are saved by grace alone, through faith alone, in Christ alone, as revealed in the Scriptures alone. And that is something that Lutherans cling to as sort of a way of navigating through all the questions about faith.
Now, a listener had a good question the other day by asking, is the word alone scriptural? Is it in the Bible? And apparently, the pastor who was on the air with us said, well, perhaps Luther made a footnote next to some related passages.
When Luther, it isn't.
In Romans?
In Romans, it isn't in the original Greek text. Mm-hmm. What Luther did was he said you need to make the Bible speak German, not Greek. You know, and so he wanted to get, while he tried to be as literal as he could, he wanted to get, his important emphasis was getting the meaning across rather than word for word. For instance, last week I talked about the second reading, which is talks about walking worthy of the Lord, and the text that I used said lead lives worthy of the Lord, and I had somebody question me on that, and I said, well, in the original it says walk worthy of the Lord, but when we talk about walk worthy of the Lord, nobody knows what that means, because walking back in Jesus' time meant what you did, your way of life, when we talk about a daily walk, for instance. And so the translation that we used said live lives. And Luther did the same kind of thing. And so he did add alone, because his emphasis was that we can do absolutely nothing, zero, nada, to save ourselves. It's totally 100% God's work in us.
Is there any remnant or even a sign that here's where Luther lived, here's where his house was?
Oh, yeah. You can go through his house and they
preserve. Oh, it's still there.
Yeah, there's a museum near the edge of town, not real far from the train station, and that's just really worth going to.
How did he live? Was it like a little cabin in the country, or what?
Oh, no. The Elector Frederick the Wise gave him the old Augustinian cloister where he had lived, and so they had all these rooms, and Katie took in boarders from the university students to help support them, and they had gardens across the river and down by the river, and she had farm. She had a small farm. By the time he died, Luther was one of the wealthier people in Wittenberg because Katie was such a good manager. But part of it was that they had all these rooms, and so students stayed with them and they fed them, and they would have maybe anywhere between 25 and 40 people at a dinner table. And it was a former monastery, so it's three stories high and has all these different rooms. And the museum for being a static museum. It's not an interactive museum or a history or a living history museum like we're used to here. Does a really good job of helping you get a feel for what it was like. The place where he burned the papal bull, there is now an oak tree planted there. It's called the Luther Oak, and that's fairly close. That was right by one of the city gates, and that's fairly close to where Luther lived.
Mm. And not a theological or religious question, but I'm just curious, how expensive was it there?
It wasn't as expensive as we thought it would be. Uh-huh. We did very well. Mary did very well in finding. We got our tickets, our plane tickets, very early.
And she's a veteran traveler.
Yes, yeah. In fact, she's in Iowa right now, going to be speaking in Marion, Iowa this weekend about Christian parenting and other topics to some of the folks there. It was not cheap, but it was not as expensive as some places are. And when you have a big breakfast, that means that you don't necessarily have to eat as much for lunch or supper. Although there was a wonderful kartoffel house, a potato house, which had like 60 different ways to prepare potatoes. And we really enjoyed being there a couple of times.
So a trip, a vacation, but lots of inspiration along the way.
I would call it a working vacation because mm-hmm. when you're preaching, I reworked both of the sermons after I sat in the churches and was able to pull things in about what was there physically. For instance, when I preached in the town church, Luther preached almost 2,000 sermons there, and I could point to where the pulpit was. Maybe it isn't there anymore; it's in the museum, but I could point to where it was, and then I can point in the other direction where his daughter Elizabeth was buried. And in between them is the font in which Elizabeth was baptized. They still have the baptismal font where all of the Luther children were baptized. And I could say that Luther could keep on preaching the gospel from that pulpit because he knew that the gospel meant that his dear Elizabeth was safe with her father in heaven. So there were things like that that could be done.
And finally this morning, as I take a look at what's happening here in this country, perhaps you'll find this interesting. This is a recent story that just crossed the wire. Crystal Cathedral Ministries has chosen Chapman University to purchase its 40-acre Garden Grove, California property as the megachurch tries to pull out of an estimated $50 million debt. Chapman was among several interested buyers, which included Hobby Lobby and the Roman Catholic Diocese of Orange. The university, which offered $50 million for the campus, will reportedly allow Crystal Cathedral to continue serving its mission by letting it lease and eventually buy back its core buildings, according to the Los Angeles Times today.
Not surprised. I had heard that the Roman Catholics in that area were interested in buying it, maybe to use it as a cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a strange story I'm going to leave you with here this morning. Pass this along to Mary. Get her comments on it. The Colorado Girl Scouts have said they would allow a 7-year-old boy to join after initially rejecting his application. The boy wants to join his sister in the group. According to a report, he dresses like a girl and loves playing with dolls. They're going to let him in the Girl Scouts in Colorado.
I'm glad there isn't time to make any comment.
The organization said if a child identifies as a girl and the child's family presents her as a girl, Girl Scouts.
Oh,
excuse
boy.
Me, my chest cold's acting up now.
I'm sure.
Girl Scouts of Colorado welcomes her as a Girl Scout. The Girl Scouts have said they have received lots of requests to support transgender kids. The organization said it would support the children, families, and volunteers who help them. So there you go, a topic for Front Porch Parenting with Dr. Mary Mann Simon. Transgender kids joining the Scouts.
You'll have to see if she wants to talk about that or not.
Only in America, huh?
Yes.
Pastor Hank Simon, our guest here, and thanks for giving us a virtual tour of Germany there in Lutherland.
Well, thanks for your interest. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I'm sometimes not sure that I really was there, but it was a really enriching time.
You got to pinch yourself, huh?
Yeah.
Pastor Hank Simon, give our best to Dr. Mary Mann Simon.
I will do that, Paul.
I think we have a recording session scheduled for sometime later in November.
Yeah, I think she's coming back to St. Louis, and of course there's a third grandson to see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She'll be here a lot.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
God be with you, Paul.
Okay, that's Ask the Pastor. Thank you, Pastor. Tomorrow, another Bible study and another Ask the Pastor. It's on between 10 and noon here, Central Time. We archive the programs. They'll be up within the next half hour. On KFUO Radio at KFUO.org, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.